This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland and Tom Chattel. The April showers have moved into May, and I think we've almost all got enough rain. I mean, I might have to mow my lawn two or three times this week. Gentlemen, how are we in mid-May? Quiet time for Nebraska athletics for the most part.
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I fell behind on my mowing too, and it was one of those where it was like choking up into the blades, you know, and you have to like stop it and spread out the grass, and you try to bag. I do at least, but it only goes so far when it's you know, ankle high, I guess.
Yeah, it's a quiet time of year. I just saw that today is the Big Ten football draft by the networks. And wouldn't you love to see that on TV?
Yeah.
Wouldn't everybody watch that?
Who would broadcast that?
I guess ESPN could. they aren't in the draft. I don't think. So, you know, wouldn't you love to see that? You know, your team, you know, where they go, Nebraska, USC, Nebraska, UCLA, Nebraska, Ohio State, and of course, Nebraska, Deion. What else did I see? I saw a story where somebody asked Deion about his little rage on social media, and he said he did it because he was bored. So, Deion's bored, and so Deion's bored. I guess we're bored too, but we're not bored because we're on the podcast. So here we go.
That's So the draft is between Fox, CBS, and NBC. I think we already know that Texas at Michigan is on Fox, right?
The big game. Yeah,
I have no idea how they were able to announce that before the Michigan Ohio State game. I don't know if that means that Fox decided to select Michigan, Texas first, or if that was some agreement between, like, Fox also owns Big 12 rights, and so there was some sort of weird agreement there, because the CBS and NBC do not have any Big 12 games. They're just Big 10 only. But generally speaking, Fox gets the first pick. They always pick Michigan, Ohio State. The second best game is Texas at Michigan, and that's off the board. The third best game is Ohio State at Oregon.
Right.
And, I'll be really curious to see who gets that game.
That's going to be the best game of the year, but obviously Ohio State, Michigan is the plum.
Right.
It'll be number one every year because it's the ratings. But, you know, the evolution of the Big Ten will be interesting because every year you won't know which game is going to is going to carry the most weight. But it won't be Michigan, Ohio State every year. And that won't be the case this year either.
Right. The third, probably the fourth biggest game on the menu is I don't know, I guess Oregon and Michigan, because Oregon goes to Michigan, incidentally.
Yeah, sure.
That's probably the fourth biggest game. And then, you know, USC is the largest property. They go to Michigan, so maybe they're the fourth biggest game. I think Nebraska's biggest game, if I had to pick one, like the one that is the largest one based on where it is in the calendar, would be the game at USC late in the year. That's
absolutely
the one that's probably going to get a plum spot. The Colorado game, we'll see. I'm sure CBS or NBC would love to have a crack at Deion. And then it's a pretty mild schedule, folks. So USC is the big ticket one. And that's the one we're all kind of thinking is going to move to Friday. Like, it's going to be a Friday night on Fox. late in the season, you know, dedicated window. And that may be how it goes. I wouldn't mind that. I would take a Friday night in LA.
But so Matt Rhule.
With Matt Rhule. Yeah, right. Right. Like I mean, I think if you're gonna play that game, you know, you want to compete against, you know, the second week of LeBron and the Lakers on a Friday night. That's probably what'll happen, right?
And I think you know, depending on what USC is doing then, the Friday night in LA is there's a lot going on. You know, you wouldn't necessarily have a full Coliseum unless it was half full and red.
Right.
But yeah, we'll be there either way.
I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Big Ten sent Nebraska to USC for football, and both the men's and women's basketball teams there too. I think. No, maybe USC basketball is in Lincoln. I don't know. But I think they're trying to create some opportunities where some of these teams can, these Nebraska fans can get out to Los Angeles.
Are they maybe trying to ease West Coast teams into not necessarily having to fly the East Coast also maybe? Maybe they're trying to create a new division or, you know, new rotation of you know, Nebraska West Coast with LA. I don't know, but the West Coast of the old Big Ten, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, TV dictates. TV tells you what's going to happen before it happens, and maybe that's what they're trying to tell us.
We will find out for sure. Speaking of just like looking ahead to the year, and I, you know, like he's certainly not the end all be all, and he has long had fondness for Nebraska. But I think you can argue that Joel Klatt at Fox is probably the number two college football analyst at this point, and he gets the best slate of games like pretty much every year now because ESPN doesn't have as many offerings, and so it's him and Kirk Herbstreit. And Joel Klatt, so, you know, I can just sense it's coming. From the end of spring, you know, Matt Rhule showing up at the Zach Bryan concert, and that was great. And just some of the rounds he's starting to make with national media and has already made. And now with this Joel Klatt thing coming out, where, you know, Nebraska, coming off a 5-7 season, is in the top 25. And post-spring, top 25, right? And so everybody kind of saw what Dylan Rayola did. ESPN was in spring for a couple days or two. Adam Rittenberg, he'll eventually write something from that. They gave him, I think, pretty good access. They're going to have people rolling through and looking at their new football building, which is pretty cool. The outside of it is not my favorite, but the interior, it seems pretty amazing to me. We're going to have another summer of hype, you know? And I think it's going to be like 2019. When Nebraska was going to be a preseason top 25 team, and they were, the difference being there's no scandal. And in 2019, a lot of our bandwidth was taken up by Maurice Washington, and there's no bandwidth now for any scandals. Nothing going on with the football program that's like a stain or any of that.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Knock on my desk, which is made of wood.
Don't jinx it.
I have an old elementary school desk that I got from a Catholic school here in Lincoln. It's awesome. I love it, and I knock on it all the time. Here it is. We're going to have a summer of hype, aren't we? Like, is Nebraska ready for that? Are we ready for that? Like, we're going to have to put on our hype resistant clothes, aren't we?
Well, maybe it tells me that the TV guys really want Nebraska to be back a little bit. You know, Joel did that with Scott Frost. He was all in on Frost early, which we all were, I guess. Guilty there. But, you know, I think it's these guys like to take chances, like to be a little different to get their thing out there. I guess you could say top 25, but I'm not going to say 6-6 until they do it. I mean, I'm tired of talk. I want to see action. We haven't seen action. You know, the action was better last year, but it still it didn't result in going to a bowl game. So what I saw in the spring game was a quarterback who can make plays with relative ease while not being sacked or hurried. But I the vibe I get from Dylan Raiola is that he's going to be a hard guy to rattle. So I'm not worried about the rules in the spring game. I think they could be better, but man, I just can't do it. I can't buy in the hype. I can't listen to it. I just, it's great. But, you know, the back end of that schedule is going to be some work. So they better get a lot done in the first half.
What I would say too is like, what I think is different now from 2019 is like, I get the sense that people are in on and maybe hyped up on the process more than the individual players. Like in 2019, it was, hey, Adrian Martinez is going to take the next step. You know, look at the talent that they have on offense. I just kind of get the sense, like when people are talking about how excited they are for Nebraska, other than some Dylan Raiola talk, it feels like it's less about the specific players and more about, okay, hey, the schedule does them a favor, or hey, look what a great leader Matt Rhule is, and look at how little attrition they had in the transfer portal, and look at how they recruit and develop and retain. And so like, that's what feels different about this to me, is like, how many years did we sit here talking about, man, wouldn't it be, Nebraska needs an identity, or what are they really working toward here? And it feels like finally they have that. And it's less, again, about sort of the individual players and pinning your hopes on them, and more pinning your hopes on just the way that Matt Rhule's going about this thing. It almost feels like there's hype, not just for this season, but for the sustainability of what the program can be in the next however many years after.
I agree with that. I think there's that for sure. There's more of an emphasis on, you know, the way they're going to do it. And I think that Scott Frost was sort of allergic to the media in a way that Matt Rhule is not. And I think Matt Rhule would say a lot of what he does is related to building Nebraska's brand. In other words, it's sacrificial. I don't know that Matt Rhule's like sun rises and sets on talking to all these people all the time. But I think part of what he's trying to do, or what he feels like he has to do to help Nebraska get back, is be the face of the program, not only because that's what coaches are, and oftentimes they are, but in order to maybe not have a player have to be that. Now, what I will say is that although I don't think the hype around Dylan Raiola is quite as high as it was Adrian Martinez going into his sophomore year, remember, Bruce Feldman said that Adrian Martinez was going to be a Heisman candidate, right? And, you know, Frost used the word Mahomes. Ironically, Dylan Raiola looks more like Mahomes just stylistically than Martinez did. But, like, he was using those phrases. So everybody was hyped up for Martinez. But the hype for Raiola is pretty high. Like, it's the thing that when I talk to people, it's what they talk about. They kind of talk – and, you know, people know that I cover Nebraska. And so they'll be like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, what do you think of Matt Rhule? And then they don't really ask me what I think of Dylan Raiola. They're just like, Dylan Raiola looks good. And I'm like, yeah, he did. He did look good. There's a lot of anticipation around him. And I do think he's actually built to handle it pretty well because of the family that he's part of and what he's grown up with. His dad was an NFL player. And I think his dad is good friends with NFL superstars. But it's going to be a chore. It's not going to be easy for him. He's walking around that campus as, you know, we would have said this last year, and I think we did. The most famous person on campus last year might have been Casey or Lexi Rodriguez. And they're, you know, Lexi's still there. So she's probably the most famous person on campus. But now Dylan Raiola is number 1A or 1B. Like he's a big deal in a very short amount of time, especially after the spring game. And that's a lot of hype to handle.
Yeah, right? I think kids today, I mean, it was, I think no one is dad, and his family, and you know, the way his dad operates, and you know, the kind of people they are. I think he'll be fine. I think he's very grounded. If he's anything like his dad,
yeah.
So yeah, I think that'll be fine. I'm not worried about hype. You know, another thing about Joel Klatt is the guy knows football. I mean, he's very good. And the top broadcasters like him get access that, you know, you and I don't. You know, they get to go into meetings. They get to talk to the coaches. And they hear him say things. So if he thinks they're going to be good, then he must know something. And he also must see something. So, and frankly, there were some games last year that they could have won where it wouldn't be a stretch that they would have been ranked. So,
right,
they just got to close the gap on all those mistakes. And where have I heard that before? But I think it's coming. But you know, I'll sit back and watch.
I think Tom hit on what sticks out to me there at the end, which is like it's about Royola's ability, but it's also about the context of the season Nebraska just had, where they go 5-7 and even average, you know, zero war quarterback play probably wins them two more games, right? Like just with the ridiculous fumbles, some of the interceptions that were silly, like even in the moment, like what you know, where was that ball going type of thing. Even average, an average turnover rate probably gets them to a bowl game. And so, like, I think that's part of the excitement for Iola is, like, yeah, you can talk about the Mahomes comparisons and the arm strength and, like, what the ceiling is. But I think the reason for optimism right out of the gate is, like, this belief that he just won't make the same mistakes. Like, he's not going to fumble the snap, that he's going to make the right read, that he can make short passes, and that Nebraska can play complimentary football. Like if that's like all you expect out of a true freshman, like that's not unreasonable. I don't think it's this idea that it's all going to be on his shoulders right away to make these plays and to scramble and make things out of nothing. Like just be a sound fundamental quarterback, let the defense do what it does, let the different phases of the game play out. And like, yeah, like Nebraska has depth, the schedule lines up. Why can't they win 7-8 games and contend?
Good point. I always look at the teams in the 500-mile radius of Nebraska and just like who's good and who isn't. And it's interesting, as I look at Joel Klatt's post-spring top 25, I see Missouri at 10, Oklahoma at 17, Oklahoma State at 19, Kansas State at 20, Nebraska 22, Kansas 23, Iowa 24. Pretty good year in the 500-mile radius. Pretty good year. Not the best year. 07 was pretty amazing, as people remember. But pretty good year, I'd say, for football in this region, if that all holds true. And Missouri is a legitimately good team. They're going to be fun to watch in the upcoming year. And I, you know, as I was thinking about, well, what could Nebraska be in 2 or 3 years? I think they could be where Missouri is now, because I think Missouri's had a 2 or 3 year trajectory. And Kansas State, I think Kansas State's actually going to be a little better than its ranking, because I think their quarterback play is going to change and they're going to be harder to stop because their quarterback's a runner. So, like, where those two programs are at right now, I think, is where Nebraska can potentially be in a year or two. I do agree that part of the hype related to Nebraska this year is, do we feel better about their offensive and defensive lines than I can remember feeling? Really, truly. They have everybody coming back on the defensive line that's relevant, and they have all but two players coming back on the offensive line, and one of those guys, Ethan Piper, got hurt midway through the season. I think it's possible that for the first – now, you guys can disagree with me, and I would love it if you did, actually. I think it's possible that the defensive line and the offensive line are the two strongest positions on the team. Is that fair, or is that – am I off?
Well, defensive, yes. Offensive, I want to see it, Sam. I think,
right.
You know, they weren't healthy, and they – yeah, on paper, it looks really good. They were older. They look better on paper, but I want to see it live. So I think the receiving core is better too. Quarterback room's better. a lot of places are better. But yeah, if that offensive line can be one of the top two, then I think you'll have something.
I had a similar experience when I was trying to think about that recently about the top spots. And like my conclusion was that it was both lines. And I almost had to stop and go back and be like, is that right? Like, that can't be right. That's not something that there's no muscle memory there when it comes to Nebraska and evaluating like that, those would be the spots. But so like, I think you look at other positions and they're maybe kind of top heavy. Like you can say, you know, quarterback's not deep, but you feel good about the top. Tight end's not necessarily deep, but you feel good about the top. You know, some different spots like that. But yeah, I mean, the defensive line, you can look at 6, 7, 8 players who are going to rotate in and make a difference. Same with the offensive line, kind of like you laid out. They have so much experience back, but then beyond that, like you could, I think you could roll out their second unit and feel pretty good about it with some of the younger guys that have had a chance to develop in the program for a year or two. So yeah, I mean, I think that plays into the hype as well, where like, okay, you can point to some breakout candidates at the skill positions and, you know, maybe in the linebacker room, fill in some voids, but like the foundation is going to be those lines. And I think for the first time, you're not looking at like 2 or 3 guys and saying, boy, you know, they need to hold up. And then this thing needs to happen over here. Like it feels very reasonable that those guys are already in position. Just if they do what they did last year, that those would be the strengths of the team, which is kind of crazy. Like you said, how long has it been since Nebraska felt that good about the line of scrimmage on both sides?
We have a scholarship distribution chart, which of course seems skewed because there's probably more scholarship and scholarship in kind players on Nebraska's roster at this point than there is 85. And so our list actually, like another list out there, reflects that. Like we're not trying to pretend that there's only 85. We're suggesting that there's 90. I think the number right now is 99. Let me see if I've got this. 100 players that are on either scholarship or scholarship in kind numbers. It's striking to me because I just updated this a few days ago where the majority of those numbers are. There's 20 offensive linemen, 20. Now, most of them are young, not, you know, like 10 of them are redshirt freshmen or younger, but there's 20 of them. There's 14 defensive linemen. That doesn't include Jack linebacker MJ Sherman or Jack linebacker Matt Noonan. And then there are 22 defensive backs. That's where they have concentrated their resources, I think, for NIL as well. Now, obviously, they had to pay Dylan Rayola or something. I don't know what the story is with NIL and Dylan Rayola, but obviously he isn't here just, you know, for no reason. But they have put a lot of their NIL framework, which is to retain players at those three positions. What's interesting to me is I think two of those positions are among their strongest. And now with the injury of Bly Hill, it's possible that secondary is a question mark. But is that the biggest question mark? Is there another group on the team that is a larger question mark than that group?
Yeah, I mean, I would put defensive backs in that mix for sure. I mean, if you have to move Malcolm Hartzog to corner and your safeties will be Gifford, who's pretty obviously a known producer, Marquise Buford, who was hurt a lot of last year. Can he come back fully and kind of realize his potential? And then, yeah, it's a lot of younger guys who look good, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. I would put middle linebacker in that mix too. I know they like Javon Wright, Mekhi Bear, and John Bullock, but those guys thrived as sort of complementary pieces to Reimer and Henrich last year. So I think there's a sense there that, you know, those guys will have to do something that they haven't necessarily done before. And then maybe my number one, Sam, would be specialists, quite honestly. You know, I wonder about Nebraska's kicking and punting situation. You know, Alvano missed a couple field goals in the spring game. And you kind of just look at the depth there and say, all right, who's challenging either one of those guys? Right. And I don't know that there's an obvious answer at this point who those might be. So you kind of forced to ride it out with those players. And maybe that's an area, especially a punter with this being Brian Buscini's last year, that they address moving forward. But that's a spot too, where like, if you're going to play the complimentary football game, but you can't necessarily rely on your guys to flip the field or to get those 3 points when every possession is critical and every point's crucial, I just wonder if that's not going to be a spot that's going to come back to hurt them eventually too.
Yeah. It's a great point on the punter. 93rd in net punting last year, folks. 93rd. That not great. Camden Cook, Sam Cook's kid, will be on campus this fall. If he can outpunt Brian Buscini, I think he would be the punter. I just think that. Alvano, on the other hand, he needs to, you know, kind of turn the corner. Because I don't know that they have other options. So
what do you think, Sam? Do you put DB as the weakest or the most questionable, or where do you go?
I still think the jury's out on quarterback. That was their weakest group last year. But, you know, I do think Dylan Raiola can turn it around. DB is – I'd probably go linebacker right now. We'll see what they do with that position. And I do think they have a hell of a position coach there. I really do. He got a really high grade, too, from Matrix last year. He was, like, one of the best linebacker coaches in the country. Like, he's really good. But I think they're in between. So he inherited the best room last year, and now he's got the youngest room. So he inherited Reimer and Henrich, and now he's got to get guys who are young to understand that defense. And I think for the linebackers on that team, that position is not easy to play. They're doing a lot of stuff. So that'll be a question mark, I think, for me, but specialist too, for sure.
I don't know if it's weak, but I think uncertain is running back. And I'm not sure how much that matters. I think they're going to have to. You need to run the ball, and they always say they want to run the ball. But I get the feeling this offense is about quarterbacks and receivers and tight ends, and I don't know that they have to have a stud running back in this offense. I just think. And I'm sure that they would love to have one. I don't know that they do. But I got a couple of the guys who are out the spring back, and I still think Ramirez Johnson or something, you know, something's waiting for him. He's been around too long. He's going to make a big play in a big game. He's going to help them. I think if they get to a bowl game, he's going to be a big factor there in some game. Mm-hmm. I just have a feeling about it because he's been around too long, and I really do like the things he adds to the game. So we'll see. Who knows? But yeah, running back. You know, there's just enough question marks to keep the folks who want to push the envelope to 9 or 8 wins, bring them back a little bit. Just enough question marks to keep things, in check. So if you're thinking top 25 and maybe like 22 or 23, maybe, right? They're not top 15 or anything like that, but we'll see. Offensive line and defensive line make up for a lot of things. If you don't have a great running back, offensive line can make guys look good. If your secondary is a little thin, a defensive line and pass rush help out a secondary, without question. So, if those two things are your strength, you're going to be okay.
Agreed. I don't know what the NFL draft numbers were last year. Most recently, I'm looking at them right now for running backs. I know there weren't a ton taken. What I can tell you is that the top rushing running backs in college football were not blue chip guys. I mean, Cody Schrader, I think, was a walk on. Right. And then Ollie Gordon was a 3-star. A lot of the guys were not. You don't need a 5-star running back in order to be a good running back, in college, and be successful. So, the highest drafted running back in the NFL draft was Jonathan Brooks from Texas. Then Trey Benson, And I couldn't tell you I know anything about Trey Benson. And then Blake Corum, who I saw like 9 million times. So, but not a, so, you know, it's relative, I suppose, what I would say. Jonathan Brooks, that name surprised me. He had a great year, but okay. Jonathan Brooks. I want to talk about a profile that Evan has been working on for a few weeks on Troy Dannon, the Nebraska Athletic Director. Now, we're not going to give away the game here because we want people to read the story on Sunday. It's going to be an A1 story. Look at you going on the whole front page of the whole paper on Troy Dannon. And it's, you know, it's about how he got here. It isn't about, you know, every thought he has now that he's here, but how he got here. I know you sat down with Troy. Don't want you to give up the story, per se, because I want people to read it.
Yeah.
But just like, as you've kind of reported this out, and you've talked to people like Bob Bowlesby, who's a big deal, right? Like in college athletics, Bob Bowlesby's way up there. And you've talked to other people too. What have you learned about Troy Dannon's personality that may shape how he handles this job? Because I want people to read about how he got here and like learn that. But like, what have you learned about him and how he might tackle this job based on what he's already done?
Yeah, he's tenacious. He's like, nothing that he has was sort of given to him. It's all, it feels like his whole career is like a passion project. You know, he's so different in terms of background from every other Nebraska AD since Bob Devaney. Like he wasn't, you know, he wanted to be around sports, not because he was good at it, but because he was fascinated by it. And so what I have found interesting about his career is from the time he got involved in the high school level in Iowa in the early 90s, like he was always looking ahead. What's the next thing? You know, he was among the first to push using the internet in the early 2000s there. He was looking at e-gaming, like adding that to high school sanctioned sports offerings in the mid 2000s, like when that was barely a thing. And so you kind of just look at what he did. He's very creative. You know, and we've seen that at Nebraska already with the Haymarket Park alcohol sales. Like he came in and that thing was at an impasse and that thing was not going to happen this year. And he fixed it in a matter of days because of his ability to relate and ability to discern like what's important and what's not. So just a really, I think, a fascinating person who will make decisions at Nebraska, who is not afraid to think outside the box, and who, you know, maybe unlike a lot of ADs, while he's making decisions in the interest of Nebraska, I think he also really understands kind of the holistic picture of things. So I think he understands that something that's good for Nebraska may not realistically happen because it won't be good for the whole. And he's learned that on these NCAA committees, the transition committee that he's been on. He's learned that from his time at Iowa too. So I think people just really enjoy reading kind of his arc. It's very unorthodox, but I think ultimately when you look at the fluidity of college athletics, like the status quo isn't going to help you that much. And I think it's that ability to be flexible and to embrace change has helped Dannon throughout his career. And I think you'll see that at Nebraska positively impact Nebraska as it's trying to find its place in this new landscape in the next 5 to 10 years.
You know who he reminds me of a little bit?
Who's that?
Matt Rhule.
Okay.
And, you know, Matt was has risen faster than Troy Dannon. That's true. So, you know, Rhule rose really quickly in the coaching ranks. But, you know, his first job was at, what was it at? It was at, you know, tiny school in Pennsylvania and Western Carolina and, you know, backwater places. I mean, Western Carolina is in a very small place. And he was there for like 3 or 4 years. And some of the formative relationships he built as a coach, including with Marcus Satterfield, were built there. He was at Albright College. Like he was, so granted, again, he's moved very quickly in this profession. because I suspect is I suspect to some degree you can get noticed more quickly in coaching. And I think people identified his excellence pretty quickly. But I don't think anything was really handed to Matt Rhule. He didn't have some sort of minted legacy coming into this, and I don't think Troy Dannon did either. And the reason I mention Rhule is because I think that Troy Dannon is here in part because Rhule likes him. Like, I don't think that Troy Dannon's here if Matt Rhule's like, yeah, I don't think so. Like, I think that was part of the deal, is that whoever's going to work with Matt Rhule's got to be somebody who understands and gets Matt Rhule as a grinder. And I'm Troy Alberts, Trev Alberts was all of those things. But Trev Alberts was he was kind of the golden guy, like from the minute he got at Nebraska, and he was an academic All-American, and he was a Butkus winner, and like he grinded too at UNO. I'm not saying he didn't work hard, because he did, but he was always like, anytime Trev Alberts was around, you reminded yourself he's 6'5" and he's 215 pounds, and he, like, he just has a certain quality to him. And Troy Dannon, I think, is kind of a man of the people.
Yeah, no
Did you
doubt.
get that sense when you're reporting this story out, that he's kind of a regular guy?
Absolutely. I mean, while Trev Alberts was getting ready to be an NFL draft pick, Troy Dannon was a media relations guy at Northern Iowa, working with the women's basketball team and setting up interviews and like recording, on football game days, he was in the press box helping log stats. Like that's Troy Dannon in college. And he didn't know what he wanted to be. He tried sports medicine and clearly quickly figured out that the athletics as a competitor on the field wasn't for him. And so he just had to find a way. And that was his skill set. He still to this day, he's at Nebraska now. Half of his career was in high school. It just focused on girls athletics in Iowa. Iowa's the only state in the country that has two athletic governing bodies, one just for boys, one just for girls. So he wasn't even like talking football or boys basketball or any of that. It was all girls for half of his career. And like you could see some of the things that he did there, and it's detailed in the story, some of the innovations that he made there. But like you could even see it then. But it was just a matter of, man, how do you go from that to a major college athletics job? And you don't do it easily. Like you have to wow some people, you have to win some people over. And he's got absolutely a reputation for being really relational, for being a top level communicator. And I asked him about, how does he go about looking ahead, right? Like, is that a skill or is that something that you have to work for? And his opinion was like, he's going to talk to people inside and outside the industry about it. So like if he's talking about college football, he's going to talk to lawyers and he's going to talk to TV executives, and he might talk to a couple well-connected boosters about it, as well as people within. And so like that's served him well at other stops. And I just think it's really fascinating when you see all these changes coming with revenue sharing and everything else. Like I just get the sense based on Dannon's history that he's going to have a pretty good sense of where he wants Nebraska to go with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know Troy that well. I've talked to him a couple of times, and the people I know in the Missouri Valley and over in Iowa and Des Moines, sports writers and SIDs love the guy, and they have known him for years. And that just tells me he is a man of the people. If the If scribes and SIDs love you, you're a regular person who
Right.
isn't trying to put on a front, trying to use people to get to the next level, whatever. What I think would be very important for him in Nebraska is ADs, one of them, two of their biggest jobs is to hire the right coaches who make the money and the breadwinners. So hire a football coach who wins, hire a basketball coach who wins if you're a basketball school. The other thing is you've got to raise money. And I think his the biggest jobs for him right now he didn't have to hire a football coach, but he's got to manage money and he's got to generate money. And this is a really unusual time right now because money has never been spread more thin in college sports. If you're a college fan or a donor who gives, because you've got NIL in there, and if revenue sharing happens, that could come from sources like TV, but the boosters are going to have to make up some of it. And here in Nebraska, the stadium is going to be reallocated. People are going to have to probably that they're going to have to pay more. And hopefully he's got a winning football team to make things smoother. But here's a guy that is coming in and people are going to have to start paying more, or they're going to have to decide what to do with their money. And I think his relational, that sort of trait is going to come in really handy, where he can walk into a room of boosters and not sit in the back, or not get up in front and give a big speech, but just talk to people. And, you're right about Trev. He was always Trev Alberts Husker, the Husker Russian, the Husker hero. And there was a little bit of an aura around him. When he walked into a room, right. It was, oh, wow, this guy's important. And sometimes when you make tough decisions, the people resent a powerful figure, but they look at it like they're being told to do something. And they, there can be some resentment and some pushback. I just think an AD that could come in and sort of be like one of the people, one of the guys, it might make some of these things that he has to do smoother. And certainly if he's a good listener, he can get a lot of people on his side if they think he really cares about him and he shows that he does. So a man of the people with a little vision is probably a good formula right now.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Amen to that. I think that's where it's at. Let's end with baseball quickly. Evan, big series with Indiana. Currently, Nebraska is, a half game or a full game out of first place? Illinois has that possession alone, correct?
That's correct.
And so Illinois is in possession of first place with Indiana, Nebraska, and Purdue either a half game or, I guess, a full game behind. Yep. Illinois and Purdue will play in the final series of the season, so something will happen there. My hunch is that Illinois will win that series. I think Purdue is kind of overrated, but Nebraska has its big series this weekend with Indiana, and then I think they close with a series they probably ought to win. But going into this weekend, big deal, right?
Really big deal. Yeah, this is, like you said, they're tied with Indiana for second in the Big Ten race, a game back. It's at Haymarket Park. So series over the years have always been pretty key with Indiana, and this one certainly is. You look at Illinois, Purdue, Indiana, and Iowa. Of those teams that are in contention, first of all of them are playing each other this weekend, so you're going to see some significant movement. And then secondly, of all of those, only Nebraska will play a non-contender before the end of the regular season. They go to Michigan State next week. So I still think Nebraska's in solid position. I think it's probably going to come down to Illinois or Nebraska between those two. Now Indiana can make a move certainly as well. But I'm going to be writing about this for the preview, Sam, but like you look at the scenarios too. And one question I've gotten just as much is, hey, can Nebraska still host a regional? And right now their RPI is at 23, which is a little too high for that conversation. But in a hypothetical where you win 5 of 6 and then you make a run in the Big Ten tournament, I don't think you can rule it out entirely. History would say of your non kind of power conference teams, ACC, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, like if one of those schools is going to host, you need to win about 40 games and you need to have an RPI inside of 20 to have a chance. And so I went back too and looked and I think it was 6 teams in the Big Ten have hosted since Nebraska's joined the league, and every single one of them won the Big Ten regular season title. So I think that is where it starts, is if you want to have a chance to play postseason baseball at Haymarket Park, you probably got to win 5 of your last 6 to win the league and to have that chance. I don't think the committee is going to give that to somebody that finishes 2nd in the league. So I think a lot of it's going to resolve itself. Indiana's a team that can slug, but they don't have a ton on the pitching side. And so if Nebraska can find some momentum here for the stretch run, I think that's in play. Still, the most likely scenario is they're going to be a 2 seed in an NCAA regional here in a few weeks. But first, absolutely have a chance to win the Big Ten and in what is a closer and probably more exciting Big Ten race than we've seen for the most part. Usually it's like 1 or 2 teams. This year you've got 6 that are in the mix here into the final 2 weeks.
Yeah. I can't remember what your preseason standings were. I know you thought a lot more Nebraska than some other people did, but what did you think was going to happen before the year?
Preseason, I thought Iowa was the favorite. And as it turned out, their pitching depth wasn't nearly what it has been. And some of their weekend guys have been disappointing. Indiana, I had finished in 2nd. They were a regional team last year. I thought their offense would just kind of overpower some of their pitching deficiencies. And that's sort of held up, and that could still hold up. And then, yeah, I had Nebraska 3rd.
Yep.
I don't think I saw anybody else nationally that had them higher than 5. I just felt like they kind of knew what their identity was going to be a little bit more. Maybe I put more stock in the Rob Childress effect. And I do think that's paid some dividends for them. So that was kind of the top 3. Purdue was definitely a surprise. I think some of that's a product of scheduling. And they did add some impact freshmen as well. And then Illinois, too. I kind of saw them as maybe a Big Ten tournament team for sure, but definitely not in first place down the stretch. They kind of strike me as a team where their whole is greater than the sum of their parts sort of thing. They don't have a ton of stars, but they just have found a way. And, you know, with Iowa and Purdue still on their schedule, I guess they still have to prove it. But that would be, I think, one of the – if Illinois holds on and wins the Big Ten – regular season, I think that would certainly be one of the bigger surprises in regular season finishes in recent history.
The end. So Illinois got the hardest run here at the end. They have to go. They have to play Iowa, and then they play Purdue. So if I was going to make a run at this thing, they're going to do it. They're going to sweep Illinois. Well, actually, they play Illinois the final weekend, or maybe they play them this week. I'm not sure.
They play this week, and that's
right. That's the end of their schedule.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. So I don't think Iowa can do it. I mean, if they swept, they'd be 16-8, and
It would be really close. So they have to sweep Illinois, and then they've got some non-conference games on the way out. Who does Nebraska play the final weekend?
At Michigan State.
Okay, and that's not a great baseball team.
They're 500 in the league. They're okay, but not great.
Okay. But it's a road game at a stadium where there'll be 9 people in the stands. And so that's never easy. It's like you're back in high school. Maybe Michigan State will have 100 people there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We've watched Creighton baseball, who I actually think might be a better team than Nebraska overall. They swept Nebraska, but they've really struggled to go on these road environments and play in front of no one. And they're obviously playing some decent teams, but they're getting beat consistently. And they're playing in stadiums with, 50 people in them. It's just tough. Tough when you have to create your own energy on the road like that. So we'll see what happens. Okay, that is our Pick 6 podcast for this week. We may take a break next week. I think it might be time to do that. It's going to be kind of quiet. We'll see what Nebraska baseball does this weekend. We'll definitely be back 2 weeks from now to preview the Big Ten tournament. And we'll do that early in the week because Nebraska is going to be in the Big Ten tournament in baseball. And we'll see where Nebraska softball is at that moment. For Tom and Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.